Cozy traditions feel good. And that includes your fall makeup look. From lashes for days to enhancing a smoky eye with your favorite shade of Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is your go-to for completing every fall look. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/cozy for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/cozy.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batts with Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired and aviator. He's at the Sagamore Institute, riding up a hypersonic vehicle, a testbed platform, Mach-TB it's called, Wallops Island. But I want to build one of these weapons because Jerry indicates that they're testing now to see what it is that performs best at these speeds, Mach 5 and higher. Jerry, what we have is a system where you carry it up to a certain level, and then the hypersonic takes hold of the craft. So what does it look like? Does it look like a conventional rocket? Does it look like a hypersonic aircraft with swept wings? Picture it for me. There's no humans in it. What does it look like?
Well, John, it would look to all of us as very much like a very conventional rocket, perhaps smaller. Something that the Army and the Navy are working on, something called conventional prop strike, which would be, a single stage type of rocket that was going to launch the glide vehicle, which would be mounted inside of a nose fairing up to get it to a very high altitude, as well as this very high Mach 5 to Mach 8 speed, and then essentially tip over. But unlike a ballistic missile, once it comes over the arc, the top of its arc, this vehicle, once it detaches from the launch vehicle, from the rocket itself, then has the ability to glide and maneuver. So the one thing about this is we could launch this on a certain angle, but then after it detaches, it could actually vector left or right. So it could change course. So the adversary would be watching this weapon's launch and trying to get a sense of which direction it's going, what target it would be going after. And then once it tips over, glide vehicle could then maneuver either left or right and sort of radically change its course. Then during its descent, it's going to maintain its speed as it trades altitude for velocity, altitude for energy coming in, so it can keep its speed up. But then it can also go through almost a zigzag pattern, weaving left, right, making it more difficult to counter it with other types of defensive measures, whether that would be missiles or whether that would be directed energy like lasers. But the point is that it would have a very high degree of survivability, being able to get there. And then ultimately, John, it would continue to descend, trading again altitude for velocity as it comes in. And then with precision and utilizing, whether it's the current global positioning system or some sort of a future positioning system, it would hit with great accuracy, but with great energy. And this is the key thing. When you have something that's coming at Mach 5, we know that energy is derived from mass times velocity. And so if you retain that velocity and impacts, it's going to virtually destroy, or for that matter, penetrate if it's a deep bunker or something like that, to be able to penetrate deep in there and carry that kinetic effect, as well as any explosive that could be mounted in that glide vehicle warhead. So now how that warhead looks, you can imagine that it's, probably got some amount of apertures, of small winglets that come out of it. They don't have to be large because, quite frankly, you don't need a large wing when you're going that fast, and would have ability to have some maneuverability, some ability to warp those apertures that come out to allow it to change direction. But the fact is that's what we're working on, as opposed to sort of just a conical warhead that we would see for nuclear weapons in the past. This, which we intend to be conventionally armed, not a nuclear weapon, but just conventional armament, would probably not be conical, but more of a wedged shape glide vehicle. And really, John, as you and I were mentioning earlier, probably something that's no larger ultimately than your backyard wheelbarrow. In terms of its size and dimensions and mass, certainly pointed on the front, but then widening apertures coming back to give it that maneuverability.
Non-nuclear, right? It's a
yes.
It's a new kind. It's a weapon between conventional ATACMS and a nuclear weapon, somewhere in between.
Yeah, this allows us to access different floors in the escalation ladder, different rungs in the escalation ladder. Albert Wohlstetter, the great nuclear theoretician back in the 1960s, talked about the fact that there was this escalation ladder and that after a certain area, let's just call it the 10th floor of a building, there was like this speed elevator. You could be conventional up to the 10th floor, but then you had a speed elevator to the 20th floor, and that was a nuclear weapon. And his concern at the time was we had nothing to be able to address that period between conventional weapons and then going nuclear and sort of in a competition or an exchange between nations. Hypersonics actually allow us to access more floors, the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th floor in that escalation ladder as we bring a new advanced capabilities to bear in a competition or a conflict between great powers.
Conflict. Our adversaries, Russia and China, where are they in the development of a glide vehicle?
Well, John, right now, I hate to tell you, everyone, but it appears that both of them are ahead of us. Russia has demonstrated the use of a hypersonic weapon. In the Ukrainian combat, they don't use a lot of them because these are very explicit. Think of them not as silver bullets, but platinum bullets. China, a couple of years ago, did a demonstration of a fragmentation hypersonic bombardment weapon where they pop something up over the North Pole and then have it come around the South Pole. And then it came in and then split almost like a shotgun shell. And we took a significant note of that in the public domain, that both of them seem to be not only moving towards hypersonics, but perhaps have even achieved initial operational capability of some advanced systems. We, despite having been the historical leader in hypersonic research, are behind in the development of an operational capability within our military services.
So the X-15, the Bell 1, Bell 2, those were early testing of hypersonic technology right then. And then we went the Mercury, Gemini, Apollo way and didn't pursue it anymore. Is it being pursued now with gusto? I mean, you're talking about experiments on Wallops Island. This needs a big program. Is there one?
Well, Mach-TB is that program because Mach-TB is going to allow us to ramp from a total number of flights of 8 times over next year, but moving towards 50 flights per year, test flights per year beginning in fiscal year 2026. This is a very aggressive program that we want to be able to test as many different designs and many different components as rapidly as possible. It is our hope that the Mach-TB or the Mach testbed program will allow us to accelerate the development of hypersonic weapons, operational hypersonic weapons by as much as 2 to 3 years over what the course we were on previously.
Captain Jerry Hendricks, retired Navy captain, aviator, senior fellow at the Sagamore Institute, writing at the National Review Online. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.